Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
On this June 2nd, we are one day into the six-month-long Atlantic hurricane season. Are you ready?
Hurricanes don't only infect the coastal counties, they also affect inland counties.
New technology is adding to the lead time residents can expect when a storm threatens, even when things go very bad, very fast.
And it's highly recommended that you prepare for that worst-case scenario.
We'll also dive into the matter of how you can tell if you're in a flood zone, the ins and outs of buying flood insurance, and mark the 25th anniversary of the big one that hit South Florida. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is a special start of hurricane season edition of Capitol Report. Hurricane season officially began yesterday and will end the final day of November. Officials across Florida are urging residents to get ready now for whatever storms may come. From member station WUFT in Gainesville, Grace King has some helpful tips on what that preparation should include.
Owning a restaurant on the water was a dream come true for Peter Stephanie. For 26 years, he watched the waves rise and fall just outside his business. Still, the Nebraska native hardly had an idea of what damage the tide could do until Hurricane Hermine hit Cedar Key in early September.
There was 5 or 6 foot waves in here, and it was pretty emotional.
Stephanie and his wife Gina are co-owners of the Island Room restaurant. Though typically a destination for weddings and fancy dinners, the venue was reduced to structural beams after the storm. Everything else was either gone or ruined.
Kind of wiped out all the walls and tore everything apart.
Yet even after more than $100,000 in lost revenue, Stephanie says he would not change anything.
There's nothing we could do to stop that. There's nothing you could do to stop the water.
While Stephanie and others along the coast may not be able to stop the water, officials say there are things they can do to better prepare.
Part of that is starting off with an emergency communications family plan. Need to get that, need to get emergency supplies together, and you need to know your evacuation routes.
That was Gracia Check, Region 4 Director of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. She says everyone needs to prepare for potential hurricanes.
Hurricanes don't only infect the coastal counties, they also affect inland counties. Between the rainfall and surge, the rivers are high, you get the excess rainfall, and there was unexpected flooding.
As FEMA works to get people prepared ahead of large storms, the National Hurricane Center is working on fully implementing a new alert system for when the storms hit. Storm surge specialist Jamie Rome says after 2 years of trial periods, one new feature is storm surge watches and warnings.
Watch would imply that you need to elevate your awareness. Think about what you would do if you were under a warning, meaning you should be thinking, okay, what am I going to do? Am I in an evacuation zone? If I'm asked to evacuate, where would I go? These types of thought processes. And then if you're under warning, that means you've got potential for life-threatening conditions and you need to take action to protect yourself.
Rome hopes this new update, along with 4 other changes to hurricane season forecasts, will help save lives during the storms. Still, preparation remains critical.
I think it's important for people to really not wait. And we practice what we preach. You know, I have to go home and dig out the generator and the shutters and the bolts, and I hate it. But it's very important not to wait. Once you're under a hurricane watch or hurricane warning, you don't have time to do these types of things, so do them now.
CEO of Flash.org, Leslie Chapman, agrees.
Even if you're not hit by the hurricane, think about this. If you're ready and you get to stay home, you're off the road, you're safe, and you're making way for people that have to get there. So, for example, if you have what you need, you don't need to be rescued. The first responders don't need to come to you, and then they can go take care of people that may not be able to help themselves, like the elderly or people with access and functional needs.
This weekend, Florida will forego $4.5 million in sales tax revenue by allowing residents to purchase disaster preparedness items tax-free. Batteries, flashlights, and even portable generators costing $750 or less are on the list of items that will be exempt from Florida's 6% sales tax. Grace King, WUFT News.
One very important lesson learned last year, even though Hurricane Hermine was technically a Category 1 storm, a minimal hurricane, and was more than 100 miles offshore from Cedar Key, its storm surge in that area ranked in the top five. Florida Public Radio Emergency Network meteorologist Jeff Huffman says this is why the National Hurricane Center will be issuing two different types of warnings this season.
Your phone, if you allow it to do so, can make many different types of noise. Some are light and non-invasive, but some are aimed at getting your attention. It's a wireless emergency alert from the Department of Homeland Security, and there's a new reason you may hear that sound this hurricane season.
So if you're in this warning area, that means you've got potential for life-threatening conditions and you need to take action to protect yourself.
That's Hurricane Specialist Jamie Rome from the National Hurricane Center describing a new storm surge warning that could be issued by NOAA this year. He calls it beautifully simple.
I think that's the problem with storm surge is everybody's hung up with specifics, elevation, the storm moves over here, storm moves over there. Instead, we need to be focusing on, hey, has a significant enough threat in your community that the National Weather Service feels necessary to warn you. You should take action.
The warning is different than one of those detailed maps you may have seen on a website that shade in a color with a corresponding water level. Meteorologist Angie Agnetti from the National Weather Service Jacksonville says those numbers aren't an exact science.
The key is that it's giving you a worst case scenario, and it's highly recommended that you prepare for that worst case scenario.
Pat Bonish and his wife own a store in Cedar Key, and they thought they had looked at worst case straight in the eye during Hurricane Hermine. He and his wife were rescued by the town's mayor during the height of the storm.
I've never seen it come in that fast, and that's sort of the reaction everyone has said, is that it came in so fast. I mean, within a matter of, I'd say, a half hour to 45 minutes, it had come up 2 to 3 feet.
And it just kept coming, up to 7 feet in some parts of this quaint Nature Coast community. The force of all that water can wash out roads and bridges, which would be a huge problem for Cedar Key. The entire town, not just those who might flood, is connected by only one bridge.
The last thing I want to do is put other people in danger to have to come rescue me because I was the idiot that stayed.
And to think, the eye of Hermine stayed more than 100 miles offshore. Storm surge is not something new, but history has taught us that the hazards from the water are not always married to the wind. This is why hurricane specialist Mr. Rome believed there needed to be an upgrade to the way the science was communicated.
Well, the storm surge warning is really, you're either in it or you're not in it. So it's a very quick call to action. If you're in it, then you would probably seek evacuation instructions from local emergency managers.
And Angie says, frankly,
if you're waiting on the storm surge map and the storm surge watch and warning to prepare, you're already behind the curveball.
And Pat and his wife certainly won't be waiting this year.
I think one storm like this will bring it to the forefront of everyone's mind to say the next storm, days in advance, will we make sure we're 100% prepared. Knowing what we know now, I would probably never stay.
From the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network in Gainesville, I'm Jeff Huffman.
Still to come on Capitol Report, do you have flood insurance? Maybe the real question is, can you afford flood insurance?
Now it goes up 25% a year on last year's premium until it reaches the $47,000 again.
How can you tell if your property is in the hurricane danger zone? If you can look out your window and see any kind of water, that's a pretty good indicator.
Living in Florida comes with its risks, especially if you're close to the coast or close to a river or close to a pond.
And a quarter of a century after Hurricane Andrew, we'll hear from the man who literally talked South Florida through what seemed like the end of the world.
You know, I didn't know if South Dade could recover. It had spiraled into such despair. And is this going to be unrecoverable?
Certainly, wind is the primary danger from hurricanes, but water runs a close second. In low-lying Florida, flood insurance is a must for many property owners, but the deadline is looming for federal reauthorization of the National Flood Insurance Program. Quincy Walters with WGCU in Fort Myers explores the history of the program that's racked up billions of dollars of debt, who needs coverage under the program, and why it's so expensive.
It's a windy, slightly overcast day along Fort Myers Beach. This is what's called a special flood hazard area. If you're mortgaging property here, like Jackie Lezak is, you're legally required to get flood insurance.
I'm good. Yeah, so this is our little gift shop.
Lezak is tending to the Sea Gypsy Inn. It's a quaint little gift shop, as well as a small four-room hotel. It has a historical designation from the city.
This also was the first library in Lee County in 1955.
When she opened up shop here in 2012, she got flood insurance from the National Flood Insurance Program, started in the 1960s to address what the private market had not done. It's managed by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, and it has to be authorized every 5 years. The deadline to reauthorize is this September. According to FEMA, Lezak is one of nearly 2 million Floridians with a home or business covered by the program. That's out of about 5 million people nationwide. Lezak has $180,000 in coverage. Her premium started at $2,700 per year. 1 year later, it skyrocketed to $47,000. She thought it was a mistake.
After I got done taking deep breaths and trying not to cry, I picked up the phone and started making phone calls to our town council, to our county commissioners. I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
She found out the hike was a result of the Biggert Waters Reform Act of 2012, legislation that removed subsidies from policies in the federal insurance program. Lezak says she feels like it's more of a tax than insurance.
It's because only people needing to have a mortgage have to have this. I had to let the policy lapse.
In an email, FEMA told us there are also several factors that lead to rate increases. There's inflation and legislatively mandated fees, surcharges, and just regular rate changes. Lezak says based on the new estimates after the Biggert Waters Reform Act passed, her store was expected to flood every 3 years. But she says it never has.
Ever. It's been here since the 40s. It's not flooded once on record. It just doesn't make sense.
Agent Chris Heydrich of Heydrich & Company Insurance on Sanibel says he's not sure how the National Flood Insurance Program, or NFIP, came up with that calculation either. Heydrich says Congress quickly realized the problem caused by the Biggert Waters Act because the following year it implemented new legislation.
The Homeowner Flood Insurance Affordability Act of 2014 was passed to provide some relief for the unintended consequences of Biggert Waters.
So what happened to Jackie Lezak's rate?
I re-picked up our flood insurance.
Closer to her original $2,700 rate.
Now it goes up 25% a year on last year's premium until it reaches the $47,000 again.
The mechanics of the national program were planned to work like this. It would borrow from the Treasury Department in times of bad flooding, and in times of little flooding, the program would pay the Treasury back. But it never took into account the potential for catastrophes like Hurricane Katrina in 2005 or Superstorm Sandy in 2012. The former administrator of FEMA, who is also the former director of Florida's Division of Emergency Management, Craig Fugate, says it's hopeless. Even though the National Flood Program has racked up nearly $25 billion in debt, members of Congress, like Republican Congressman Francis Rooney of Naples, want it reauthorized but reformed.
And we've told them how we feel they affect Florida and how important it is that if we have a private sector flood program, which would be a great thing, that it also provide for a national flood insurance backup. And it needs to be at an affordable price.
Jackie Lezak's Sea Gypsy Inn is right on the beach, high-risk area. Of course, her flood insurance premium will be high. But experts say even if you live inland, you should consider flood insurance.
More than 25% of National Flood Insurance Program flood claims come from X zones, which are low risk.
That's Billy Jacoby, a floodplain manager in Lee County. Because people without flood insurance means a heavier burden for taxpayers when inevitably, another superstorm hits. I'm Quincy Walters in Fort Myers.
As we just heard from Quincy Walters, National Flood Insurance is a must for those whose property is in a flood zone. But how can you tell if you are in such a zone? From member station WUSF in Tampa, Susan Giles-Wantek explains.
Let's start with storm surge maps. They help emergency managers make plans to protect the nearly 21 million people who call Florida home. By predicting how high the water wall forced onshore by a storm might be and how far inland it might invade. That will also help you know when it's time to head for higher ground. And this year, storm surge maps are new. Chris Zambito is the chair of the Florida Floodplain Managers Association. He said Florida used to have 11 distinct SLOSH models. That's a model specifically for hurricane planning. Tampa, Miami, the Panhandle, they all had their own. So the state and the National Hurricane Center worked together to create a super basin.
When you have any of these mapping studies, whether it's for the FEMA mapping or hurricane planning, you have these seams of where one study was done and a study next to it was done. And so there's some inconsistencies right at the border. So by doing a super basin now, they kind of had the whole peninsula of Florida remapped.
So here's how that might play out on evacuation maps in Hillsborough County, for example.
You're going to see red, yellow, green, blue, and it's going to go push a certain extent inland. So what I'm saying is, from at least the few maps that I've looked at, that extent inland is not changing dramatically. I think what you're seeing, though, is that the depth of water shown to be within those zones is going up.
Right now, emergency managers across the state are adding this new information into their plans. But Pinellas County Floodplain Coordinator Lisa Foster says if you hear there are changes to evacuation zones in your neighborhood, stay up on it.
Living in Florida comes with its risks, especially if you're close to the coast or close to a river or close to a pond. I mean, even in just a highly developed urban area, the stormwater system can get overloaded. So I think you just need to be aware.
That goes for tourists, too. Make a plan if your hotel is in an evacuation zone. Then there are flood zone maps, which are updated as flood risks change because of development, erosion, or other factors. FEMA uses them to determine whether you have to carry flood insurance and just how much you'll pay if you choose to go with the National Flood Insurance Program. This applies to those with a federally backed mortgage. Right now, there are only about 1.8 million flood insurance policies in effect in Florida. Flood insurance rates under the national program are surging now because it was pushed deeply into the red by payouts for Hurricane Katrina and Rita in 2005, and more recently, Superstorm Sandy. FEMA's Susan Wilson says congressional changes in the last several years will now force owners of properties that had subsidized flood insurance rates to eventually pay full freight.
Their policies are being increased at a gradual rate so that eventually they will become actuarial or risk rated.
And she says it's important to remember that flood insurance is a separate policy from homeowners insurance. While hurricane season is the time of year people talk most about the risk for flooding, Pinellas County Floodplain Manager Foster says it isn't tied to a season.
Because I understand that anywhere it rains, it can flood. A tree could fall and block a pipe. There could be nowhere for the water to go. You could get a storm surge. There are multiple things that could happen. I mean, it's the risk you take to live in Florida.
That's why one of the mottos of emergency personnel is turn around, don't drown. I'm Susan Giles-Wantuck in Tampa.
Evacuating coastal areas is always a concern when a hurricane threatens. Florida, of course, has a lot of coastal areas. One region of the state, the Florida Keys, in fact, is nothing but coastal area. And that means when a strong hurricane looms, evacuation there is the only option. WLRN's Nancy Kleninger talked to some of those responsible for watching storms in the Keys about how to persuade people to leave while planning for those who can't or won't.
The Florida Keys are not the only place in the U.S. that's vulnerable to hurricanes. That's true anywhere on the Atlantic or Gulf coasts. But the thing about the Keys is that when you're an island chain, the whole county is a coast. There is no inland.
Much of the Florida Keys is only about 5 feet above sea level.
Martin Centerfit is Monroe County's Director of Emergency Management. The county makes the calls on evacuation. When a storm threatening the Keys is projected to be Category 3 or above, the official policy is mandatory evacuation. The county does not open shelters. And that's where it gets tricky with the geography of the island chain. The inhabited Keys are 120 miles long, with one road, the Overseas Highway, connecting them.
The big challenge we face for evacuation of the Florida Keys is it takes 36 to 48 hours for us to move everybody out of harm's way.
They have to make the evacuation call before they know for sure whether the storm will actually hit the Keys or at what intensity.
The storms change, they move, they turn.
John Rizzo is the Warning Coordination Meteorologist at the National Weather Service office in Key West.
We try to provide not just what is the most likely outcome, but also what we call plausible worst case.
So when the county makes the call to evacuate, it might be with only a 30 or 40% probability that the storm will hit the Keys, or hit it as a Category 3 or higher.
We can't wait for those probabilities to go up because then we run out of time for evacuation.
So there's the challenge of when to make the call. And then there's the challenge of persuading the public to heed the call. Some people don't have the money to leave. Others have left before and wound up in the path of storms like Andrew in 1992 or Wilma in 2005.
We're definitely planning on people staying because a lot of people aren't going to leave.
Craig Cates is the mayor of Key West. That's the largest population center in the Keys and the farthest from the mainland.
The difficult part is our first responders to send them out in the middle of a hurricane because somebody is doing something stupid, and then they expect somebody to come and save them and risk somebody's life doing that.
And even if you make it through the storm, it could be unpleasant afterwards, especially if a section of the highway or the water pipe underneath gets washed out.
No air conditioning, no power, perhaps no running water. It starts becoming a very stark contrast to the quality of life that we live in a normal day here in the Florida Keys.
People who have been in the Keys for a while consider themselves hurricane veterans. Hurricane George was a Category 2 storm in 1998 that downed trees and knocked out power for weeks in some places. Wilma swamped a lot of the islands in 2005, causing millions in damage to homes, businesses, and cars.
But when we go into Category 3, 4, and 5 storms, much like what last hit the Keys in 1960, Hurricane Donna, those become catastrophic. They destroy everything in front of them. And so it's trying to get people to understand that, look, though you may have been through Wilma, though you may have been through George's, it can get much, much worse.
There's also the challenge of reaching people who haven't been through a hurricane at all. Wilma was more than 10 years ago. Donna, more than 50.
What happens is that some of your population leaves the coast, and you lose that life experience. And new folks come in years later. And so it sometimes seems like you're starting over again, but not unlike that of a school.
Learning to live in a storm zone and the possibility that you might be ordered to leave even when the storm doesn't wind up coming here is part of life at the end of the road. I'm Nancy Klingener in Key West.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, besides the beginning of a new storm season, this also marks the 25th anniversary of Hurricane Andrew. For the residents of South Florida, Brian Norcross was that lone voice in the void that talked a terrified populace through Andrew. When all other stations went silent, his was the one that stayed on the air and kept listeners sane through the worst storm in living memory. From member station WLRN in Miami, here's Luis Hernandez.
If you were living in South Florida back in August of 1992, then you'll remember that fateful night when Hurricane Andrew arrived.
Okay.
Oh, we understand okay. We are back
now. Okay, well, now we're back on Channel 4. Let me say this so that everybody gets out their radio.
And you'll also remember the voice of meteorologist Brian Norcross, the voice that got you and me through that horrible storm. This year is the 25th anniversary of Hurricane Andrew. Brian Norcross has a new book out, My Hurricane Andrew Story, the story behind the preparation, the terror, the resilience, and the renowned TV coverage of the great hurricane of 1992. And he's joining me now in studio. Brian Norcross, such a pleasure. Thank you.
Such a pleasure to be here, Lewis. Thank you.
What's the first memory that comes back for you when people talk about Hurricane Andrew?
My strongest memory is that Wednesday after the storm, when I really didn't know what was going to happen. You know, I didn't know if South Dade could recover. It had spiraled into such despair. And is this going to be unrecoverable? Because you had people that hadn't slept in days, people with their guns, with the looters. It was complete anarchy, and nobody seemed to be able to take control.
Have you ever been through before, Andrew, any natural disaster close to that?
I went through a couple of hurricanes in the 60s up in the Melbourne area where I was living as a teenager. Really, what prepared me for Andrew was that when I came to Miami in 1983, I spent a lot of time at the history museums working on feature stories on the history of South Florida. And if you study the history of South Florida, you learn that, oh my God, this is really a hurricane-prone place. And it occurred to me that if this ever happened while I was in the weather business, people were going to be looking at people like me, especially, and they're going to be asking, all right, what do we do now?
Yeah, because I also wonder, too, what did Andrew do to South Florida?
First of all, it collapsed the insurance system in Miami-Dade County, and Bill Nelson, who's Senator Bill Nelson now, was insurance commissioner at the time, and he could see that that was just the tip of the iceberg. Also, the building codes. The pre-Andrew building code was really quite good, but there were two issues. The biggest issue was that it was not being enforced in the years before Andrew. So many homes built in the 80s and into the early 90s were not built according to code because it was not a prescribed system for how the code would be enforced.
What is your biggest concern, and what do you hope people will get from the book? Not just a history lesson, but the reality that this is an area prone to be hit by hurricanes.
I hope that people realize that storms can be worse than you can imagine. The biggest concern is, one, is people that stay near the water, but perhaps the biggest unrecognized threat is people getting stranded. Once the storm is over, the roads will be covered in sand. In 1926, we're about a 3 feet deep sand in Miami Beach. So no ambulances, no police, cars left outside will be ruined, probably no power, no water, and likely no communications. So you'll have people stuck in buildings and neighborhoods really literally on their own. And if they don't have a transistor radio, they won't even know what's going on outside.
That was Brian Norcross, the former meteorologist at WTVJ in Miami back in 1992, the voice who talked a lot of us through Hurricane Andrew.
From member station WLRN in Miami, that's Luis Hernandez. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. Deepest appreciation this week to our contributing Florida public radio stations that made our special hurricane season coverage possible. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FBRCapReport and join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: The Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.